Yo, yo, what's good, world? This is your man, Jeff, a.k.a. Blacksmith, jumping off once again on The Jump Off with another wonderful episode of The Jump Off Podcast. It's yours truly, Zion, on the line, but I also have the man, the myth, the legend, that dude named Dave. What's popping, that dude?
I'm doing all right, man. Just got off of work, rushed into the house, don't have no lights on, straight candle status, not because I didn't pay my light bill.
I'm about to say, brother, you...
I paid the light bill. That'd be bogus as hell. I'm driving a $100,000 car, and they can't pay my fucking light bill.
That's about as ass backwards as that whole garbage situation, but we'll talk about that at a later date.
You took my garbage out, actually, this week.
You mentioned you took it out. You bought a sticker for your garbage?
No. I saw one of my neighbors. They had a half-empty garbage can.
Oh, you bullshit, Dave. You bullshit. This dude said he saw one of his neighbors with a half-empty garbage can, and he put the garbage in there. That's so fucking cheap, dog. That's bogus, man.
I was getting ready to go to work, and before I left, I didn't check my mail the day before. So I happened to check my mail real fast before I drove to the train station, and I saw a couple of garbage cans that were half full. I was like, why not? So I had two bags, and the two bags got thrown in there with a couple of half-empty garbage cans. So thanks, neighbors. Appreciate it. Harbor Springs, what's up? One love.
Yeah, they probably could be looking for your ass, too.
Oh, they ain't going to know. Shoot. By the time the garbage man came, they was already at work. You know, garbage was flipped out. You know, garbage cans upside down.
Wow.
I'm garbage free. Didn't have to throw nothing in the back of my car. I'm good to go.
Wow. Well.
Love me or hate me, but I'm real.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You keep it 100. I can give you that. Love you, hate, you know, keep it 100.
I do not believe in paying $2.65 per article of garbage. I know I can afford it, but I think it's just fucking rip-off. Taxes should cover that shit. All right? Plain and simple.
That's
my
bullshit,
cheap-ass town. Yes, cheap-ass town. That's what we pay fucking taxes. Garbage pickup, roads, police, fire department, et cetera, and schools. Not to the fact that I got to pay for that. You know what I'm saying? While we pay taxes, they don't cover it.
I do agree with that. as always,
we'll talk, but we'll stop there.
Yeah, I'm gonna get into the particulars. So as always, you can check us out, as you're probably doing right now, on Facebook. Also, our main website is thejumpoffpodcast.com, and I say we go ahead and just dive in DSI into the show. Dave, what you think?
Before we dive in, we are basically 2 weeks in to the government shutdown, or what Fox News Republican Central calls it, the slim down. But I'm sorry, right, Jeff? Real fast. This is not part of the show, but...
Yes, it is. It's okay.
Okay, because we have some other things we want to talk to people. We're not doing our quickies. We're going to have a me and you discussion, you know, about some things that's been on our mind the last week after our last show. This wasn't on the agenda, but how can you call it a slim down when fucking Link was down this weekend?
Yeah, that was crazy. I heard that. I forget what state that was in.
But... You heard that?
Yeah, I know how the link system went down, so people weren't able to access their balances. But there was one state where people went to Walmart. They had to still honor the link cards, and the folks cleaned off the fucking shelves because they essentially had no limit for one day.
Well, I didn't know that. I could have made a phone call and got in. I didn't know that, man.
They cleaned off the shelves, dog. Like, real talk, because they said they had to still honor it, even though they didn't know what people's limits are, but the credit card was still actually working.
I want to know now if that comes back.
You said you had a connect. You could have exploited.
Yeah, I want to know. Here's the thing about it, though. If they exploited it, but then the government finds out that you exploited it, and then they debit your shit for the next month, so when your next balance comes, you're like, yo, you can't get nothing because you went ahead and overwithdrawed your status, nigga. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, I don't know if they were able to keep track, though.
Well, there's a lot of purchases, and eventually, once it's over, there's going to be a lot of people working overtime who got to keep up pace to what actually happened, and then, you know, figure out balances, and eventually, just like any kind of credited company, is going to go ahead and debit your shit.
That ass, yeah.
But you know what, though? I got a link, though, so I could hit a few people up and be like, yo, nigga, I could use some milk and some juices and bread and some steaks and scampies and lobster and crab.
Some steaks and scampies. You a fool, man.
Hey, well, can buy all food items.
Yeah. You could.
Man, I didn't know that, man, because it was like Saturday. I was at Walgreens. I'm like, Link is down. I'm like, oh, shit. and real fast, though, Blacksmith, how is the slim down when multiple reports say the longer this goes on, if you have money in your 401k, you know, whatever your retirement is, depending on your setup is with your company, if you have money in stocks, the longer this goes, there's a good chance right now that you're probably going to lose 20% of your investment stake in your retirement fund if you have money in stocks in your 401k.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I mean, that's unprecedented.
How is the Fox News is going to say that's a slim down? I'm sorry. I don't think anybody can afford to lose 20% of your retirement savings.
And imagine those people who are super close to retirement.
Yes, and I'm investing heavily. I mean, I used to spend big time. I've slowed down because I'm putting a lot into my retirement savings now. But I'm looking at that. It's like, whoa, hold on here. I could have kept that money to myself if I'd known this slowed it down. And I got to rearrange some. I know I saw it now saying don't jump to conclusions. But if you have money in certain stocks, you might want to move that over to different investments. And right. So that's something I'm forced to do temporarily till things get cleaned up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, how is this, you know, a slim down, people? I mean, and they refuse to talk about it.
Yeah, they do. They do. And, you know, you have this whole debt ceiling issue coming up as well, too. And, like, it seems like ever since, you know, Obama's been in office, everything gets done at the 11th hour. No fault of his own. But, you know, it takes forever to get the most, you know, basic shit done. And I'm just hoping and praying that come midterm elections, hopefully America will realize that, you know, and put, you know, Democrats back in office so they have the majority. So the last 2 years of his term, he can just have smooth sailing and basically push whatever he wants to. But, you know, that's best laid plans. We don't know what's going to happen.
I have 2 points I want to state here on this thing. One, you know, as far as Barack Obama being voted into office, it was a change in our society. The fact that the people believed that a minority could run the country. You know, right. It's the biggest thing as far how our country existence and moving forward. But in the early part of his second election, the company, I mean, not the, you can say the country is a company, technically. You can say the way things are run is a bad company.
Right.
But we're worse off right now. I mean, for all the conspiracy theories people out there, you know, we literally have a political civil war right now.
Yeah, we do. It's a political civil war. I totally agree, Dave. And you coined that term.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, you know, Abraham, you know, with his, you know, Emancipation Proclamation when you have the North and the South and freeing the slaves and all that stuff like that.
Right.
But in a sense, I mean, when you really dig down and look at it, people, it looks eerily simple. Just the fact that the people don't have guns now fighting, they're fighting in Congress and in Washington.
Yeah.
You know, and we the people, you know, literally can't do nothing about it. It's the Whigs and, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate's going at it with Barack Obama. You got your Tea Parties. Literally, you got your Tea Party people on your, you know, moderate conservatives fighting within each other. Mm-hmm. And then you got that group fighting with Democrats. So it's like a trifecta war going on right now. And it's really worse off. So we have one part where minorities can look at a chance that we can do anything we want with his, you know, appointment in office. But at the same time, though, you know, we have the younger people who are ready for this, but the older establishment is not ready for it and want to hang on as long as possible and is fighting back, but in the wrong way where it's affecting everybody else.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I totally agree.
Yeah. And one more thing, too. One more point I want you to chime in on this, too. I was reading online. I was at work, and China is fucking pissed off by this whole thing because, as you know, China is heavily invested into, you know, loans, into, you know, the economy, anything you can think of. China is heavily invested in the United States, money-wise.
Yeah, big time. Big time. Yeah.
So if we get to this debt ceiling issue, I mean, people are saying we're going to get through this 11th hour. But, you know, China don't want to hear that shit. Mm-hmm. You know, when people owe you money, you don't want to hear it. You may not get your money. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like, yo, fuck that shit. I want my money, and you fuck up my money. And so many words China's saying. And they came out today and said, hey, we are so tired of the U.S., being this world power, and another conspiracy theorist thing here, we may need to go to this, you know, one power.
Yeah.
You know, this one world order.
And I know you were talking, too, about the whole universal currency, which is something that's been, you know, that heavily, it was heavily talked about as a conspiracy theory when Bush was in office, but it seems like that's something that they're really trying to move forward towards or create a situation where it makes, quote-unquote, the most sense to move to that.
Here's the actual line that they use. They want to de-Americanize the world. That's what China is saying.
Crazy.
That is the exact quote, and if you're wondering, you can look this up on MSNBC.com, which actually redirects to NBC.com, and China officials are talking about, you know, their fears because of this here. Even if it does make it to 11th hour, they don't care about that. They hate the fact that they may get to 11th hour and they may or may not get their money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll get something, but if we hit that point, they ain't getting all their money. And I don't know about you, but if you loan someone $100 and someone tell you I'm only gonna give you 20, you're gonna be fucking pissed.
Yeah, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
You know, why not give you 100? I thought you was good for it. And now you know that nigga ain't good for it. Now you can't give him no money. And now you even more fucked because you lost out on some money.
Yeah.
And from a local term, for a human being, like local Joe Smoes like us.
Yep. Yep. And I know that this whole situation, it's a running dialogue and a running story. So we'll be sure, you know, to continue to cover this on the jump off as things develop and we see what happens, man.
Yeah, man, I can't have that. You know, I'm in the financial sector. You know, I can't have us losing money and I work.
Yeah, that's bad business.
That's bad business, baby. You know, I'm responsible literally on 4 or 5 different applications that literally sees 9 figures of money every day go back and forth.
Crazy.
You know, so if that money gets chopped down, how that affects me. If there's no money to transfer, that means there's no work for me to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the high end, but you can see how, you know, people can get a little kind of nervous and shaky on this. Just not jobs, money, anything. It's just really fucked up, you know?
Yeah, it really is fucked up, and it seems like we're kind of got our hands tied. It's nothing we can really do about it, but wait and see what happens. What you want to talk about now, brother?
Oh, man, real fast this weekend, man. If I was white, how was your weekend?
It was good, man. It was good. I had family over. We chilled out, watched some good movies and stuff like that. I watched a what I thought was going to be a great boxing match on Saturday. but it turned out to be kind of eh.
I knew it was going to be a great boxing match, and I didn't say it on the show, mm-hmm. but you can find my quotes on Facebook when mm-hmm. I was talking to one of my friends I went to high school with, Joshua Manzi. And I literally said, if Tim Bradley does not fight like he did against Ruslan Provokanov, and try to slug it out, and he strictly boxed Juan Manuel Marquez, he will win 8 rounds to 4. Unless, you know, if he starts trying to slug it out and go in a duke-to-duke war, Marquez will counterpunch time him and catch him. Real simple as that. But I said, I think he learned his lesson, because he never fights like that at all. He just got caught up, the inner fighter in him, and you saw what happened. He had a concussion for like 3 months. He said he had headaches. He couldn't, you know, he was dizzy. He couldn't walk straight for 2 months, basically, he said.
Yeah, yeah.
So literally, like on Wednesday or Thursday, I said, I believe Bradley is going to stick to his game plan because he learned the hard way. Like knuckleheads we are, once we get our ass spanked, we figure, hey, I'm not going to do that shit no more. Responsible human beings.
Right.
Like, oh, shit, I did the wrong thing. I can't do this.
Yeah, that was a common sense.
What did he do? He boxed. He showcased his speed, his athleticism. He took away everything that Marquez wanted to do. He wouldn't let Marquez corner him. Marquez was clearly frustrated. You can see some of the late of end rounds. And what happened? One judge literally had it 8 rounds to 4. The other judge had it 7 rounds to 5. One judge gave Marquez 7 rounds to 5. And I said on Facebook, too, that I can see certain rounds, depending on your angle point, you can give some rounds to Marquez because they were so close. You know, but, and I mean, everybody from ESPN, Yahoo, you take it, any sports outlet had it 8 rounds to 4, basically for Bradley. So you can look up my Facebook timeline on the Jump Off Podcast, and on my timeline, I called it.
You did. You did.
Yeah.
And one thing, and you'll be able to articulate this better than me, that dude. I know Bradley won, but for some reason, I don't like that nigga. Now, I just don't like him. So, like, what are your thoughts on him as a boxer?
He doesn't do all things great. He has a lot of good things in his repertoire. Everything he does is good, which leads to the fact that, like I say about Danny Garcia, all he does is win. Now, of course, people are going to look at the Pacquiao fight. Yes, we know that happened. But you know what, though? You can't knock him for it. That's the fucking judges.
Right.
No, the judges are old and incompetent that they had there, and that's their best judges in Vegas, and they got it wrong. You know, but we got to move past that. That was one fight. It was bad judging. He didn't cause that. But you got to look at Bradley. You know, even though he's not great at one thing, he's good at everything else, and he has beat the who's who at 140 and 147, and he's clearly now in the top 5, and some people now can say he's top 3 pound for pound in the world now.
And I still consider him a B-plus boxer.
And, Exactly. You know what I mean? His problem is he's not exciting. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have much power, of course, leads to his 31 wins, only 12 by knockout. So he's not going to wow you by that, you know? And then, of course, he got that big-ass dome of a head. So he does use his head, you know? Yeah, and that's a weapon.
Hell of a head.
That's a weapon. That's the reason why he beat Devin Alexander, because he used so many headbutts where Alexander ended up getting the cut. And then Alexander in his, you know, he did not know how to, what's the best word? He didn't have his composure, and he basically lost the fight on that. You know, he wasn't prepared for someone headbutt him to shit and got cut. And then the fight got stopped because of the cut eventually. But he didn't fight well because he didn't know how to adjust. You know, but he's beat the who's who in boxing at, you know, at one point he was at 140. 140 was a great division. I mean, there was tons of great talent. And besides Amir Khan, who he didn't fight, which he did clearly duck. I will say that. He did clearly duck Amir Khan. Mm-hmm. He's beaten everybody at 140. He moved to 147. He's the WBO belt holder. He's not pretty. You know, I mean, but how many guys you know in every sport, Jeff, that who is not pretty?
Yeah, but they flat out get it done.
They get it done.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, hey, I mean, and Marquez, I got to say this, as much I like Marquez, and I'm a Marquez fan, you know. I was rooting for Marquez even though I thought he was going to lose. But talk about a fucking crybaby. He actually felt that he was robbed. Him and his trainer, Nacho Bernstein, said that this is the only undefeated fighter with two losses. During the press conference, Tim Bradley was gracious. He said that this was my hardest fight, harder than the Pacquiao fight. He gave him so much love. His trainer, Joe Diaz, showed them much love. He would not do a post-fight interview. He barely did the press fight. You know, he was on the stage and talked all the shit about Bradley and basically walked off the stage. Now, I can understand if it was like the Pacquiao fights, because clearly the fights that he did lose, you can say they were a draw or he won. You know, because I watched all those fights, and I clearly thought that he won two of the three easily of the one draw and the two losses that he has. But I can understand that fact. But this was a close fight. Bradley took you out of your game plan. You did not execute your game plan. And Bradley showcased his best. He made him not look 40, even though he wasn't 40, and he's not a 4-year-old. I mean, he's technically not a 4-year-old boxer when he fights, but Bradley made him look 40. Mm-hmm. So talk about a sore loser. I can't stand that shit, you know, when that happens. Like, if it was controversy, you got it right. But you know, so take the L, and there's other ways to, you know, to protest your issue. But don't be like, fuck this dude, man. He's the only undefeated fighter with two losses. I ain't got to say nothing. And he drops the mic and walks off the stage, basically.
Yeah. Before we go to our next topic, my question for you is, what's next for Marquez?
He can retire. He made a lot of money. The dude lives in Mexico. So you imagine, the dude makes $6 million in this fight. He made over $10 million the last fight of Pacquiao. Not to mention his other career winnings he's made. You know, the dude, and he has a regular gig on ESPN Deportes as a commentator. You got this American money, and you live in the heart of Mexico, and then everybody ain't trying to fuck with you. The cartels ain't trying to kidnap your kids. You are like a national treasure. He could easily just retire, but there's other fights for him if he chooses to fight. He even said before this, he said, win, lose, or draw, he wants to fight on. So if he does, I mean, he can fight anybody at 140 or 147 and make decent money. It all depends on if it's the right fight. Because at his age, he shouldn't just be fighting anybody. It's all about the big money fight now. Like, and he says he doesn't want to fight Pacquiao ever again. And then he showcased that by turning down $10+ million to fight Bradley for $6 million.
Yeah.
He's a man of his word. Even though he's a crybaby, he's a man of his word. So if he doesn't want to fight Pacquiao, I know there's $5 million paydays for him out there. So, I mean, he said he'll fight on, so it all depends on who Top Rank, you know, wants to put him in the ring with. They can easily have him with Brandon Rios. You know, if Brandon Rios loses to Pacquiao coming up in November, they can do that fight.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. You know, if Rios wins, you can have Rios and Tim Bradley fight, because, you know, they're both at 147 now. You can have that fight. You can have Ruslan Provokhnev if he loses to Alvarado, you know, if he wanted to come back up to 147. You got Mike Alvarado. If he happens to lose, he can fight Marquez. There's a couple of fights that, like, you know, Top Rank don't have that many people in that division. So they can kind of shuffle up and throw a couple of fights in between now and 2014, basically.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, that definitely remains to be seen. There's a lot of good boxing matches coming up, so we'll continue to, you know, cover those and latest and greatest in the world of that sweet science called boxing.
That's right. And real fast, though, the next subject I want to talk about, Blacksmith,
mm-hmm.
it was on the undercard of the Tim Bradley-Marquez fight. was Orlando Cruz fighting Orlando Salida for the WBO 126 belt. People don't realize that Orlando Cruz is the first openly gay active fighter, you know, in professional boxing. And he was fighting for, you know, the 126 WBO belt. And if he won, he would have been the first openly gay champion. And unfortunately, he got his ass knocked out in the sixth round.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And this is my commentary on the plight of the gay athletes. I will be honest with our jump off fans. I will real be 100 people. When I was young, growing up, not because of my parents, but just because of my friends and the environment, and I admit I was homophobic. You know, it wasn't until I was 25 years old when I worked at a certain, you know, certain company, won't say that name, the person sat next to me was an openly gay person. And this dude was the coolest cat I had ever met. I mean, I've been around other gay people, but, you know, this dude, I worked with him next to him for a year and a half. And after that situation, you know, I did not have those homophobic issues anymore, people. So I will be honest and real and true about that. I mean, he was gay and I was straight, and we both knew the boundaries. And I talked to him a certain way, and he understood. I wouldn't talk out loud, you know, say certain words. But he respected me, and I respected him, you know. So I say that to get to this point here. I don't think that just because of a certain status, it shouldn't define you. It should be by the type of person you are, and the work that you put in, and then your overall quality and body of work is what defines you. I understand that, you know, by him being, he could have possibly been the first openly gay fighter as a champion, that, of course, easily could have knocked down barriers, they say, right? Mm-hmm. But I can say that's the same thing about the black quarterback. We don't want to be considered NFL like, you know, the black quarterback. Mm-hmm. Black men want to be considered just a quarterback.
Yeah, we don't want to add that extra on there.
Add that extra. So, you know, all the fanfare and publicity, I understand that, you know, and good for him. He's able to come out, and there was some backlash, but he came, you know, it came, basically came with more fanfare, you know, no negativity, actually. It was actually encouraged.
Yeah, it was all love.
It was all love for Orlando Cruz, and I got mad love for him, but it shouldn't be about because he's gay. It shouldn't be because he is a good fighter, and he had a chance to win a world title.
Yeah,
is how I feel about it. What do you think, Blacksmith?
I mean, I totally agree with that. I think, for one, I'm really happy in our society that this whole, you know, people come out of the closet, people are more comfortable in doing it, because as we all know, 10, 20 years ago, this is like super, super taboo.
Yes,
you know
exactly
what I'm saying? But I think that the reason why people continue to emphasize, oh, this will be the first black this or the first gay that, is people like to have people like it's good story. It's a good theme to be the first this, the first that. And I think that's how we compartmentalize when it comes to news. It's always good. It's always a thing of first. So I understand why people are really pushing the envelope and using the whole first type of ideology. But I agree that the fact that, you know, he just needs to just be the best boxer he can possibly be. People just need to recognize that.
And the same could be said about people saying, well, that dude, about Barack Obama. I mentioned earlier about him being the first black president. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that happened. But after he got elected, I didn't say he was the first black president anymore. I'm saying that's Mr. President now.
Right.
I know there's some people, of course, in the black community say, you know, my president is black. Even Jay-Z had a song, my president is black, you know, and things of that nature. But it was by his work, it was by his attitude, and the people felt that this man could do the job, black, white, whatever, mm-hmm. eventually, you know, how he got it.
Right.
You know, because if he wasn't qualified, there's no way that this world, this nation, I'm saying, would elect a, you know, an African-American president.
Right, right.
So in a sense, even though he was black, it was his character and his work that pushed him above Hillary and then eventually to the White House for a second term now. So I say that with Orlando Cruz, it's like I want people to look at him. I mean, he'll be back. I don't know if he'll win a world title because the problem is he does not hit hard enough. Orlando Salido, don't look at his 12 losses. You got to remember, the dude started fighting when he was a teenager. He got most of his losses learning on the job, technically. As soon as he got into his 20s, he finally found his niche in boxing. And the dude can knock people out. And that's what happened to Cruz. He just is not able to hit hard. You know, but at the end of the day, I don't look at – I mean, you know me as a big boxing fan. I didn't care when he came out he was gay. I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, but, you know, I mean, he's in the 126 weight class. How does he fare against the Gary Russells of the world? Or at the time when Mikey Garcia was at 126, he's at 130 now. How would he fare against him? Or against Salido before he fought Salido this weekend? That's how I felt about it.
Yeah.
You know, and so as we progress into this new world, you know, as we move forward here, I understand the plight of the gay man. It's not the same as the black man a long time ago, but, you know, there's similar, you know, obstacles.
Right.
You know, but at the end of the day, I just don't want to hear the news about, hey, you know, this and this here. I want to see his works. Is he worth the merit? And I say that to coincide that with Jason Collins, blacksmith.
Yeah, the openly gay basketball player. Now, he's not an active player, but he came.
No, he's not an active player. Yeah. And people, I heard 92.3 in Chicago, which is Ricky Smiley Morning's show, they were talking about him. He doesn't have a job yet. He came out, you know, of course, after the season. In the offseason, he was a free agent. And he doesn't, you know, he's no one has called him into camp. And now people are saying because he came out, he can't get a job.
Right.
And people thinking that because he's gay now, hey, you know, it's like he shouldn't have came out, or it's once again, you know, we're seeing a gay backlash.
Yep.
Now, I have a few things to say, but I want to ask you how you feel about this first before I give my two cents.
About the whole Jason Collins situation?
Yes, sir.
I thought that by him coming out, that was going to actually drive him to be more relevant, because he's obviously wasn't a relevant NBA player. I thought it was going to drive him to be relevant and to actually cause him to get a job. And I was actually surprised that people are saying that it would do the total opposite.
Well, let me just school people really fast to listen to the show here. Jason Collins is not a good basketball player.
Nah, it never was, never will be.
He has not – he's a center in the NBA. He has not been a formidable good center for the last five seasons, people. Let's just put it out there on the table. Take his sexual orientation off right now. The last 5 years, he has not been a good player. At this point, at this career, he's been in the league now for 12 years now, right? 12 seasons. Mm-hmm. He's been the guy they bring in because he's a good locker room guy. He's a good veteran that can help the younger players out. You know, when you have that one guy at the end of his career and you got some young knuckleheads because, you know, they'll be drafting kids like 1 year out of college, you know, or they're 2 or 3 years in the league and they're less than 21 years old. He's the guy that they bring in to say, hey, we want you to work with this guy here. Yeah, you know, we need you to get this dude to wear a suit, you know. If you guys go out after the game, you know, make sure he ain't around too many of them hoes.
Right,
you know
exactly.
What I'm saying? You know, if he gets one girl, cool. But if it's 3 or 4, make sure you can chop that down just a little bit, because we know he's a millionaire athlete. He may get it in. Or, you know, if you can show him how to be a good professional. And so that is one of the reasons why he does not have a job. He hasn't been good for 5 years, people. Like, normally an NBA center, they get jobs because they're, like, you know, because they're a good professional. Like Nazir Muhammad for the Bulls, for crying out loud. He's not been a great player for how long now? He never was a great player. He's an okay player. He's on the Bulls because he's 7 feet tall and he's a good professional.
Yeah.
You know. And then you add the fact that he's gay. Now, that is one reason why he doesn't have a job, because think about it. If he hasn't been good for 5 years and you bring him into a camp, it won't be about the team. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all about him, which is not good when you're trying to assemble this roster and get ready for the regular season, because the coaches, they're trying to build a team atmosphere, a team environment.
That's what I would call a Tebow factor.
Exactly. So he's more of a distraction because of his sexual orientation, not because it's not a negative in a sense that he's gay. It's a negative because of the press. You got coaches who's trying to scout people who might make the final roster. If you have some injuries, you're trying to see who can actually fill in these spots. And every day, at, you know, before practice, all you're going to hear is Collins this, Collins that. And, of course, since he hasn't been good for the last 5 years, what happens if a coach is forced to cut him, which he has been cut the last 5 years? Can you imagine that coach in that franchise getting the backlash for cutting him before he even plays a game?
Crazy.
So I see Collins possibly getting a job when the season starts, you know, once there's some major injuries occur, like maybe around the All-Star break or before that time. You know, around December, we see a lot of injuries happen, you know, but mm-hmm. he could get on a roster by that time. But people, I just want them, everybody to realize, just go to NBA.com, look at his stat sheets. That says enough right there. His stat sheet, I mean, it's only paper and black and white. His stat sheet says enough right there that says this dude wasn't good, and he going to get cut again. You know, so yeah. Let's not make it about, like I said, the whole thing, let's not make it about gay, you know, or not black or white now. Because as I'm older now, I can realize that. Let's look at the merit of your work, and does your work justify for you having this job?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so that's how I feel about this here. I really want to hear, you know, if we have any gay fans listening. I know I have some. I'm cool with the lesbians. I got a lot of lesbian friends, you know, so I'm just kind of curious. Like, I don't even bring up.
Yeah, LL Cool Dave.
Yeah,
lesbians love Cool
Dave. Exactly. I hate to say that.
3 years ago we said
that. Yeah, and I hate to say that, you know, but sometimes we got to justify that every once in a while, because when you make poignant points like that, people may think that you're against a certain thing, and I'm not. And I hate to say that. I got a lot of friends, you know, because I'm cool with the gay community. And they cool with me. Mm-hmm. I love them, you know. Not in that way, you know, technically, you know, but I got mad love for them.
Right.
So I just wanted to be known that it's about your merit and your works and your individual character as a person, not about your sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Because I don't come out saying I'm straight and I should get a job because I'm straight.
Right.
I mean, of course, we're the majority, but how would that look like, though? I got a job because I'm straight. You know, it's like, he didn't deserve the job. The gay person deserved it over you.
Yeah.
But I wear my straight card on my sleeve and say, hey, I'm happy wearing my black card. You know what I'm saying? No. I do what I do because I'm a hard worker and I do what I want to do. And I want everybody, you know, not to be homophobic and look at everybody that way.
That makes sense, man. That makes sense.
That was the main part. I don't know if you had anything to touch on about that. That was on my chest. I've been seeing the Jason Collins thing. I saw Orlando Cruz. I just had to say something about that, you know, and not in a negative way. I just wanted to be positive and point these things out. I didn't know if you had anything to add extra to that.
No, I mean, it's definitely well said. I don't really have anything else to add to it. I just hope that people can continue to make progress and not fall into that whole superficial aspect of things. But, you know, we have to grow and learn and just try our best every day to look at things as objectively as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know I had a lot to say on that particular topic. I know you have a lot to say on the next topic.
And what's the next topic?
The next topic is, people, me and Blacksmith, as everybody know, we in the Chicagoland suburbs. We barely live about a mile away from each other. Southwest suburbs, stand up, baby. But Southwest suburbs got a problem,
Jesus. A huge problem.
Got a huge problem. We on that Breaking Bad wire status, baby. I'm putting out there like that because I didn't know, like, I mean, I'm in the suburbs, you know, I work in the city, and of course, I used to be in the South Side heavy back in the day, so I've seen a lot of drugs, you know. I've seen people on the ooh-wee. Mm-hmm. I've seen people on that ooh-wee. You know, there's a different ooh-wee and then that ooh-wee.
Yeah, that real bad shit.
Yeah, that raw, like Prop Joe would say, you know, coming off the boats. And, you know, we know there's a lot of crime in Chicago, West and South Side. It's heavily in the news. We hear about the murder rate every year about the city of Chicago. But lately, Jeff, I text you, and I saw a whole bunch of commercials about suburban white kids dying of heroin in the burbs, right?
And yeah, man. 290.
And people are losing their fucking mind.
Yeah.
And I text you, people, I was like, before we start, I was like, yo, have you seen these commercials? White kids are dying out here on that raw.
Of course, since the white kids are dying, it's getting major, major news play.
Yeah, so I want Jeff's input on this. I got a lot to say, but I want Jeff to say a lot on this, you know, that I want you to chime in. But so you informed me on the slang. Yeah, I didn't even know this. That's how slow I was. I don't keep up with the burbs like that. I can give a rat's ass. But now I got to give a rat's ass because my neighbors could be on the ooh-wee.
Yeah, you never know, man.
Because out here in Chicagoland, Chicago suburbs, people, I-88 and 290 are major highways. And they connect, you know, the western suburbs to the city. You know, going to the west side and then eventually downtown and then break off to the south side. You break off only to the north side.
Mm-hmm.
But because these highways are basically straightaways, the kids from the suburbs now are able to hop in their cars and drive to the west side, where, of course, drugs have been rampant for decades and no one didn't make commercials about it, really. and getting that heroin and bringing it back home to the suburbs, and these kids are ODing.
Yep.
And it's gotten so bad that on my TV, I see commercials. They don't show black kids in the commercials. They show them. They show nothing but Timmy's and Jessica's in the commercials.
And Becky's.
Becky's and John.
Yeah.
You know? And so, Jeff, I just want you to start speaking. How do you feel now about the rampant heroin? We're not talking about weed people. We're talking about heroin.
Heroin
in the suburbs, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I first heard about this whole epidemic, I would say a couple of years ago. It's actually, and doing some reading today, they've referred to 290 as Heroin Highway actually as far back as 10 years ago. But I wasn't aware of this until a couple of years ago. And yeah, it was a huge influx of suburban teenagers taking 290 to go to the west side of Chicago to buy heroin. A couple reasons why, you know, it really hit big on the news a couple of years ago when I saw it. One of the teens that passed away, and I can't remember which suburb it was, which western suburb it was the son of a police officer. So, you know, when the police officer's child dies from heroin sold to him, you know, from the hood, then obviously that's huge news. And the police officer went on and on about, you know, saying how he had no clue this was going on. There were no obvious signs of him, you know, no needle marks, no track marks, et cetera, et cetera. Little did he know that they're repackaging, not repackaging, but they have different forms of heroin now that people can actually snort.
Yes.
And ingest that way. Yeah, so these
yes.
so these teenagers who are doing it, they don't have to do OBO school like Bubbles from The Wire, shout out to Wire, and actually shoot up shit in their veins and have these obvious track marks on their arms. So it's you know, it can be snorted. They say when it's snorted, it gets there just as quickly, if not quicker, into your system. And another thing about heroin compared to how it was before, it's dirt cheap compared to how it was. And so, yeah, so it's becoming an epidemic because you have all these suburban white teenagers, you know, having to go to rehab or dying from it, whereas heroin has always been an issue in the black community, but it's obviously more mainstream now because a certain ethnic group is falling by the wayside.
Yes, yes. And I was reading a lot of stories and doing a lot of homework before we recorded the show here. And one of the main problems is these young suburban kids are going into their, you know, parents' medicine cabinet and taking their parents' Vicodin and Oxycontin. More Oxycontin than anything else, you know, because Vicodin, of course, can't be addictive, but Oxycontin is that ooh wee, you know, prescription drug. What happens is when they can't get no more Oxycontin, they go to the next best thing, which they know they can get, which is heroin. And yeah. I read a story about this 25-year-old web developer. Now, this is where it hits home for me because I'm technically a developer slash engineer slash web engineer. Whatever you say, I'm a jack of all trades, right? So this is in my field. We had a 25-year-old who had an accident, and then he got hooked on Oxycontin, and he couldn't get no more because he went through it. His doctor wouldn't give him so much. So he basically hopped in his car, drove to the west side until he found somebody. And he said, and I quote, that I found a guy and he acted like he was my friend and I was able to score heroin, the snort version. Now, it can depend on where you're buying it at or what corner on Austin, you know, you got from Austin Boulevard or Harlem,
right?
You know, on the west side. It's cheap as $10 a hit.
That's crazy.
So can you imagine like a person in my field who's a web developer who may make anywhere between I say $70,000 to $120,000 a year. $10 a hit. Shoot, he can go ahead and drop $200 or $300 and be good. Mm-hmm. But then you know what though? When you're making that kind of loot, because you know the people in the suburbs ain't hurting for money like that, they can get hooked super fast. And the problem with the snort version is it's more addictive and more potent than shooting it off as in a needle. So you got these kids saying, "Hey, I can snort this shit, and only for $10, you know, for a high, I'm good."
Is that wrong?
And that dude lost his job and, you know, his parents, you know, he was robbing his parents and everything. Like, less than, like, 6 months, he was out the game. Literally, lost his job, parents, you know, the two of them, everything. Man, 25-year-old web developer making good money, six figures.
Crazy.
And then, my girl Nicole, she worked in the school system. And she was telling me with the high school kids that she dealt with in her previous jobs, this is in high school now. freshman to senior year, most of these kids were addicted to Oxycontin and heroin. And this was like 4 or 5 years ago, she told me. Mm-hmm. And I never had this conversation with her before, so I started looking at this, like, word for real? She was like, oh, yeah, these kids were on heroin and Oxycontin, hooked, strung out at 16 years old.
That's crazy, man. And it's sad, like super sad.
It's sad, but can we see people, the hypocrisy, if you living out in the Chicagoland suburbs, what's going on now? Because we got commercials. They're talking about one out of every 14 teenage deaths now are because of heroin overdose. That's pretty fucking high.
Yeah.
That they're saying that. I don't know if they're inflating that to one particular town, but, you know, some of these stats are true, but you can kind of massage it the way you want to. But no matter what, if it's one town or whatever the case may be, one out of 14 is fucking high.
Yeah.
But because of that, now we got these websites. Now we got the commercials, not late night, prime time when I was texting you, Jeff. It was like 7 o'clock at night that was playing these commercials. Everybody's off work, and you can see this commercial. But no one ain't talking about the people in the west side of Chicago who lives right next door or probably live in the same building scoring that same heroin, and we ain't got no commercials for them.
No, we don't.
We talk about the crime rate, people dying, but why are they dying, Jeff? Because the gangs are getting the heroin from the Mexican drug cartel. That's why we have these fucking wars and the deaths in Chicago, people. Because the Mexican cartels are bringing that shit up here. And then you got the gangs making money, and they're fighting over turf to get that money. They ain't fighting over colors no more.
No, man. These gangs, like, gangs have changed and evolved so something wicked, man. There are no more rules. It's get money. At all costs, even if you got to kill somebody in your same gang.
Exactly. That's where the murder is coming from here. If they focus on that aspect, if they're just not murder. I mean, of course, you look the wrong way, they're going to shoot you. You see all these drive-by shootings.
Right.
But why are they drive-by shooting? Because someone was selling on their area, or they want to take over that area. And what do you do when someone's on your turf, or you want that, like the wires say, that real estate? You gotta take the either they get on your package, which means you guys they gonna buy off from you, or you gotta take them out.
Mm-hmm.
That is the major of the problem. It's not because we just got some dumbass black kids who don't know no better. That's
right.
True, but what they do know is getting this money. They know that money is power.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's what all boils down to.
They're getting that, and then all of a sudden now, let's be real: white suburban kids in affluent homes are dying. And now it's a problem. No, people, it's always been a problem. It's just the fact that you didn't care about the people who didn't matter much to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this was like, really, Jeff? Heroin highway?
Yeah, heroin highway. And another thing that came about this week, speaking of, while we're on the topic of drugs, is, and this is something I hadn't even heard about before, in Joliet, so this is a little bit further south, there was a drug that hit hard recently called Crocodile.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah, and it's a kind of it's a even cheaper alternative to heroin, Dave.
Wait, it's cheaper than $10 a hit?
Yes.
I know, I heard about this epidemic, but I didn't know it was cheaper than the $10 snort heroin.
Yeah, it's like $5 to $7 a hit.
Stop playing.
That's what they're saying.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
And what Crocodile is essentially is it's codeine, and they cut it with gasoline or lighter fluid.
Oh, so wait a minute. These kids are basically ingesting gasoline.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, the codeine gets the high, but to make it the way it is, you need the gasoline to kind of cut it with, right?
Exactly, exactly. And they inject this.
Oh, they're shooting the shit up.
Yeah, they're shooting the shit up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the fucking crazy thing about it is this shit causes gangrene, Dave. And for those of you who don't know what gangrene is, that was a nervous laugh, but you shoot it up, it causes sores to form in your body, and your flesh eats away at itself from the inside out.
Oh, my God, that's fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a picture, but I didn't know the details.
Yeah, yeah, and you get these sores on your body where it looks like somebody burnt cigarettes all over your body. That's basically what it looks like. And the first person in the U.S. supposedly died from Crocodile recently. He was in Oklahoma. It happened within, I think, the last 24 to 48 hours. But yeah, I mean, you shoot this shit up and these sores form and your skin and your flesh is eating away at itself. And it's a cheap high and people are doing it, seeing these sores form, but it's highly addictive, like most other drugs. So they literally kill themselves from the inside out. Mm. Crocodile.
That's terrible.
And they call it crocodile because of the scaly skin that you get.
Wow. Here's something I want to add to. I found some stats here, Blacksmith.
Okay.
And they were stating that the main abusers, like the heaviest amounts of people are 17 to 30 are the true customers. And one of the things they bring out is that, you know, we live in Aurora and Naperville.
Right.
Is where it's the hardest because there's over 145,000 people, you know, in Naperville. Then you got Aurora, it's nearly 200,000 people. There's five public high schools in these two towns that we live in, where we're neighbors at, Jeff.
That's crazy.
So you got over 300,000 people, which means that you got to look at the fact of the kids involved who are in high school, who are addicted to Oxycontin, and then graduate because how cheap it is. They don't got to worry about a prescription to get this heroin form. Mm-hmm. And so let me pull this up here. Where was it at here? I'm sorry. They was talking about how controlled substance arrest in Elgin alone last year is almost doubled in Elgin. Now, I'm going to like about a good 15 miles up the road, but you still can hit 88 off of Elgin to a certain degree.
Yeah, you can.
Just like it's a heroin highway. And they was saying between 98 and 2007, hospital discharge ages from 2024 increased 67% in the Chicagoland suburbs.
Wow.
67%.
Wow.
Within a 9-year period. That is some hardcore stuff right there. They said, you know, they basically saying that, you know, you look at your neighbors, you think you live in this nice community, you know, we see stuff on TV about in the heart of the city, and there's really problems here in the suburbs as well. That's what they're going at. So I just find it really hypocritical. Because we got, of course, me being an African-American male, you know, we got a lot of young African-American males who are going the wrong way because they're involved. They don't have the right proper training, the bad influence, and all they know about is getting money because they don't have a father in the home, they're in a bad neighborhood, things of that nature. And no one says anything. We've gone through different police chiefs in Chicago trying to catch why we have all these problems here. You know, and crime rate keeps going up until this year. The crime has actually gone down, but we're still going to knock off 400 deaths this year in Chicago alone.
Yeah.
Even though it's gone down. We're the lowest in like the last 5 years. But that's not saying much when you're still knocking off 400 probably this year.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good chance. But I just find it really hypocritical that, you know, we hire police chiefs and nothing's really getting done. You know, at one point they talk about bringing the National Guard in, Blacksmith, but martial law. But soon, and I want, you know, our white listeners, anybody to say this, as soon as we hear about white kids dying, that's when we get the commercials. That's when we get the outreach programs. That's when they say, we got a problem, we need to stop this. That's when they say they start raiding drug houses and things of that nature. Why weren't you raiding these same drug houses a year or two ago when you knew that it was a drug house? Come on, man. I was in the West Side of Chicago a couple weeks ago. I knew a drug house when I went through West Side to Oak Park. I knew one. I saw one. How do I know? And I'm just a regular okey-doke civilian. You know, I'm a regular Mark. How do I know this?
Another thing.
For the police job, they should know that just by working their beat.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another thing I wanted to add is that coming up in the next couple of months here is rumors that both Reverend Al Sharpton and Martin Luther King III are going to be moving to Chicago for approximately 2 to 3 months, spending the majority of their time here and then traveling to New York and other areas whenever they have to conduct business to really try to get a hold on this epidemic of crime in the city. So, you know, that's going to obviously bring a lot more attention to Chicago anytime you have Reverend Al coming through and a descendant of the great Martin Luther King Jr. I'm hoping that, you know, obviously it's going to get some headlines. I'm hoping there's actually going to be some tangible progress made as a result of that move to Chicago.
I just don't think the 2 or 3 months where he's going to be here, it's going to make a lot of headlines. You know, he might reach a few people. It's not enough, though.
Yeah.
Let's be real here. Chicago's been broken for how long?
Yeah, several years, I mean, man.
We're talking decades.
Yeah.
You know, we've been broken for decades. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a good thing that he's doing this. But it takes more than him just coming out here for a couple of months and just saying, hey, I'm going to reach out, and then he's going to go to New York, you know, and then, you know, wherever he's going to go to next, make his stopping grounds. It's great, you know, and then I know some people, I got a lot of white friends that say, yo, where Reverend Al is only here when there's a black problem, where is he when there's a white problem? Well, you know what? There's a white problem. He'll be here for 2 or 3 months now. But is that really enough? I mean, and the funny thing is, this, we say this is war on drugs. There's not really a war because wars eventually end.
Yeah.
People, it's a problem. People want to get high.
Yeah, that's not, that's never going to stop.
People want to get high, and then we got people overlooking certain things because of a certain affluence of people. Like I said, we're talking about this now because another affluence of people is hitting the problem. But once people get a taste of that high, that's a wrap. It don't matter if they do heroin.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's heroin or, you know, if they want to smoke some weed, you know, which will be legal medical in January, which I have no problem with. I like to use it for medical purposes if that becomes possible for my migraines. That's why. Because I'm tired. Reason why I say that, because I'm tired of taking certain things that I know that if I wasn't strong-willed, I would be addicted to. The average weak person, if you saw the drugs that I'm on for my migraines, would be addicted.
Yeah.
And that's why I would rather try an alternative that's natural herbal. So I say that for a reason. Because if I list up all the things that I'd say, and trust me, Jeff, I can get high off the shit that I get on.
Oh, yeah, but I know.
And I feel good when I take them. I ain't going to front.
Right.
But, you know, it's a prescription, and I have bad migraines, and I got to take them when I take them. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy it when I take it. But you know what the best thing is? I don't have a fucking migraine headache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm strong with knowing that I have a job, I have a roof, I got a car note, I got family, you know, I don't want to fuck up shit. So I'm strong with enough to know that, hey, this can be addictive, and I know I need this for a particular reason. But there's other weak people, in sense, who just want to get high. So how do you fight a war where people want to do something?
Hey, man, you just asked the million-dollar question there.
I just kind of curious what, you know, if our jump off listeners, you know, I want to hear them chime in if they listen to the show. I want to post this several times here because, I mean, these are two hard-hitting subjects I talk about, you know, with, you know, sexuality and your job and, of course, drug use and how it affects other people. And then, of course, we got other people and no one talks about it. But it's now really a serious problem. See, blacks have been affected, you know, minorities, because in the west side of Chicago, it's black Mexicans and Puerto Ricans who've been affected. Let's not take away anything. I don't want to, you know, take anything away from Mexicans and Puerto Ricans. Y'all hit hard, too. Y'all seeing the facts, too. You know, you got family members and friends who are hit hard, too, and no one talked to y'all and looking out for y'all. So now we got, you know, our Caucasians now. So now it's across the board. We literally got Baltimore, you know, real life in the shot. Remember that one episode or several episodes in season 3, Jeff, where they had Amsterdam? You saw the white kids were driving through and getting that shit and driving off?
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that episode.
I remember specifically. Yep, the white kids from the suburbs going there. They were scared as shit, but they was still getting their drugs.
And the black dude was being nice. I was like, how's the day doing? So can we just get our drugs and go? I'm sorry, show me some conversation. Here you go, lady. You know, that episode literally with Amsterdam in season 3 now is what Chicago and the Chicago-ass suburbs are. And if you have not watched season 3 of The Wire, people, if you got Netflix or if you have HBO subscription, if you got an app to go to HBO Go, watch that season. And you will see, literally, that's a carbon copy of Chicago right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drugs are not legal, but they're not winning the battle, really.
Yeah, so definitely jump off fans. We want you to chime in. Let us know your thoughts on this epidemic that's going on. And we very well recognize that it's not only going on in Chicago. We're speaking about Chicago because obviously we live here. But we're be interested to know kind of, you know, depending upon what part of the country or what part of the world that you're in, you know, what's going on from that perspective in your neck of the woods. So definitely keep us posted. Let us know what's going on with that.
Thank you for saying that, Black, because when I was doing my homework on this, one of the articles that came about that it was a wrong link, but it was actually the right link, in New York, said Al Sharpton's going to New York. They were talking about they have issues not in just in the hoods and the boroughs, major boroughs of New York, but the suburbs of Long Island have a heroin problem. You know, I just happened to read this, and I was like, oh, snap. Like, and I did heroin highway and stuff like that. There's more than one heroin highway depending on what part of the country you are. And, you know, the highway that leads to Long Island, they use that same term out there as well. And they said they had this big drug bust, they said, but they said how crazy the epidemic is out there as well in Long Island, not just in the projects and the bad parts of New York where, of course, it's affluent Mexican, Puerto Rican, and black. So like you said, it's not just – we know we're talking about it because it's here, but now because of how heroin could be sniffed, I didn't know a little sniff, Jeff. This is some real shit now.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
That's cheaper than crack at $10.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why people are so quick to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what I had to say on that. I got worked up.
No, man, it was duly noted, and it was definitely worth us, you know, delving as deep into it as we did. So I respect what you're doing. I respect the fact that you were voicing your opinion that way.
And the thing about it, though, is, like, I see some people who, you know, the most we can do, of course, we can talk about it and try to reach other people. This is our platform because we do have listeners. You know, we have tons of people on our group page. We have tons of users that listen to our show. So with that kind of, we're not celebrities, but we do have some power because people do listen to us and like to, you know, engage with us. So it's part of us to really go to other people as well to say, hey, there's a problem. We talk to you. You talk to others. That, you know, it got to start somewhere. Because right. The police ain't doing nothing. The government's not doing nothing. So we got to start somewhere.
Right. Yeah. And why not start here?
That's right.
When I started,
you know, not just lip service. We do shows like this all the time in the last 3+ years about drugs. We're going to constantly keep having drug shows, you know, because we got to talk about this and reach out to people. If you see some shit, you know, like, you know, they say snitches get stitches. I mean.
Yeah, I can say if you see something, say something.
You know, you can be anonymous about that shit, people.
Yeah, you can.
You know, I was watching Belly real fast. And even though he snitched the wrong reason, I remember when, what's his name? When Nas and DMX were driving in the Dodge Intrepid, and back then that used to be hot, you know. And then my man saw me the banana, and so they high roll, had to drop a dime on them niggas. I mean, they were mad because they were losing their money.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped a dime for the wrong reason.
Yep.
I say that because you can be anonymous about that shit if you know something. You don't gotta worry about getting them stitches. You know, I'm just gonna be real about it. If you know something that could eventually affect you, you need to do something about it because that shit could come back to haunt you.
Real talk. We'll talk. All right, well, I think we can go ahead and wrap up the show. What do you say, that dude?
Yeah, we went on this. Sarah's one of our jump off listeners to give us their feedback. We're gonna post this on the group page. I'm gonna post this. I don't know if we should jump. I don't know. Let's ask JD if he can put this on his Kick and Makeup page. They want to listen to this or not? You know, I know he's been doing his hardcore, but he's part of the family. You know?
Right. We can ask him about that.
You know, I'm gonna repost it several times. You know, and I'm gonna get some engaging comments. I'll put it on my timeline. I'm gonna post it on Twitter. You know, we gotta, you know, keep the dialogue going. Keep talking here about this because you never know when you keep talking, you reach out to the right person. You know,
most definitely, I totally agree.
Yeah.
So, Jump Off fans, we hope you've enjoyed our latest and greatest episode of the Jump Off podcast, and we'll be sure to continue to bring you those topics that you want to hear and that you want to chime in and give your feedback on. Until then, we holler at y'all next week. Peace and love.
Jump Off. Look, what you want, pump, double clip, pump, ride, slump, jump off, homie, jump off. All these haters on my, don't jump off. All the streets need is, jump off, jump off.